A new book called Atlas Obscura is a guide to little-known places around the world, some natural, many man-made, but all of them marvelous and strange. It's a cross between National Geographic and Ripley's Believe It or Not, and while it inspires dreams of travel and exploration, it also inspires a deep appreciation of the human imagination that went into creating many of these places and the dedication it took to discover them. It's published by Workman Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Joshua Foer, Dylan Thuris, and Ella Morton to our show now. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
How would you describe yourselves in terms of the Atlas? Authors, creators, editors, compilers?
Well, Dylan and I are the co-founders of the website Atlas Obscura, and which turned into this book, Atlas Obscura. It grew out of basically contributions from thousands of people all around the world, sharing their knowledge of the world's hidden, wondrous, and curious places. And then Ella joined us to help us create this book.
So, compilers and editors. Is that fair?
And writers. I mean, we wrote, the book is written from the ground up. And you know, every word sort of went through us, and an enormous amount of it went through Ella. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a sort of multiple-part process. People send us in stuff in, and we kind of develop this enormous database of 10,000 plus places on the site. But this is the distilled version, and this is our kind of perfect version of Atlas Obscura.
Did this begin with your blog, the Proceedings of the Athanasius Kircher Society?
Yeah, basically Dylan and I met on the internet. Funny enough, about 8 years ago. Around a blog that I used to write called The Proceedings of the Athanasius Kircher Society. And Atlas Obscura grew out of conversations we had as curious travelers, people who like to explore the world. We felt there was not a resource for people like us of something that would collect all of these incredible places that you really need somebody in the know to share with you.
And Dylan, you also had a blog called Curious Expeditions.
Yeah, so this sort of happened in parallel, basically. Josh and I worked on this project, putting on this event, this kind of Wonder Cabinet night where the real-life Rain Man was there and all this incredible stuff happened. And I was heading off to live in Eastern Europe for a year, and Josh and I started talking about this and how there wasn't a resource for this. And so Curious Expeditions was us doing some travel, my wife and I, around Eastern Europe.
Ella, you were born in New Zealand and grew up in Australia. Did that give you a taste for the strange and exotic, like the giant guitars and pineapples?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, I think people born in those countries have an instant desire for travel because it's at the bottom of the world. And to get anywhere, you have to spend 13 hours on a plane. So, yeah, Australians and New Zealanders are renowned for taking these huge, long trips where they go backpacking through Europe or Asia. And I was definitely born with that.
And a lot of road trips.
A lot of road trips, yes, past the big sheep and the big banana.
Is it fair to say that there are some entries here specifically to appeal to the person who's inclined toward road trips?
I mean, I don't think it's not a road trip book specifically.
Well, the reason I ask is if I went to Nevada, I'd be tempted to stay a night at the Clown Motel.
I have stayed a night at the Clown Motel, and it's lovely. It really depends on your level of fear of clowns, which for me, luckily, was low. But I recommend it.
And why would they even have a clown motel?
You know, it's a funny story. So it's kind of this perfect horror movie place because it's a clown motel on the side of like a dusty road that's basically the last stop for 200 miles, and next to it is a minor cemetery that's like 100 years old. So from the Clown Motel window, you can see the cemetery. Basically, the guy's dad owned it. He inherited it. The guy's dad is buried in that cemetery.
Was his name Norman Bates?
It was not. It was not. But you would not be far off. Anyway, so he just liked clowns. He genuinely liked clowns and decided to theme his hotel after that.
Is it fair for me to assume that this is a response to the packaging and commodification of travel to all of the Starbucks and McDonald's that we now find all around the world?
Yeah. I mean, look, when you travel, no matter where you're going in the world, you can stay in the same hotels, eat the same food, and experience sort of the same packaged experience that's being marketed to tourists all over the place. And Atlas Obscura stands for a different way of experiencing the world. And we have tried to create a guide for people to have a richer, more interesting interactions, not just when they're traveling overseas, but also in their own hometowns.
What were your criteria for inclusion of an entry? And did they change over the course of you working on this?
We, at the bottom of it, it's just we like things that are surprising and wondrous and awe-inspiring, and especially if they are right in front of you. There's one example that we love to give, which is the Eiffel Tower itself would not be an Atlas Obscura place, but the secret apartment at the top of the Eiffel Tower that Gustav Eiffel built to impress his friends, that is the epitome of an Atlas destination.
And anyone can go there?
Well, I think you need to have a special hookup.
It was closed for a while. I think it's being reopened. But yeah, in theory, yes, you can go there.
Aren't you now beginning to sponsor trips to some of these places?
That's yeah, right. So we actually do events in 7 cities, actually 8 cities now around the country. Just every weekend getting people out exploring and celebrating these kinds of incredible places. And now we are taking our community overseas as well on trips to places like Cuba, Bulgaria, Iceland, Myanmar, to really experience international destinations through the Atlas Obscura lens.
Let's talk about some of the things that you include, like the Angola Prison Rodeo or the Baby Jumping Festival or the Swaziland Reed Dancer. Do the babies really jump?
The babies get jumped over. It's a yearly festival in this village in Spain where men dressed as devils jump over a series of infants that are lined up on these mattresses in the middle of the street. And villagers and visitors gather to watch this happen. And any baby is eligible as long as they were born in the last year. And it's quite
the sight. It's dangerous for the babies, I would think.
A little bit. But they're on a padded mattress. Their parents are watching over them. It's fine. But the idea is that it absolves them of sin.
So by being jumped over, their sins are being taken away from them?
Yeah, just like that.
But they're babies.
I know.
Somebody should
original
jump
sin.
Over
original
me.
Original sin.
That might have more of an impact if they jumped over me. I probably have a lot more sins than a toddler. How do you fact check? Have you had any interesting fictional proposals?
It's funny because when we launched Atlas Obscura, we thought that would be a problem. Because the kinds of places that we're cataloging are really right at that frontier between the real and the I can't believe that could possibly be real. And we assumed people would be submitting tips of places that were like just on the other side of that boundary. It hasn't really been a problem, fortunately. We're constantly finding ourselves surprised about the places that people contribute to Atlas Obscura. They could possibly actually be sharing this planet with us.
Yeah, once in a while we get something where like, this can't be real. And then we do fact check. And they come in from our users. So usually they're coming in on the site from someone who has been to that place or grew up next to it. So that's one part of it. And then we call, and if someone can go there, they go there. And we try and make sure. So honestly,
you just Google it and see if somebody else has mentioned it?
Well, that's part of it. But we just do, if it's a museum, we'll call and talk to them. Or you know, again, sometimes we have this far-flung community of users. So if someone's been there, you know, they're submitting their own experience and their own photos. And that's sort of fact-checking number one.
We're speaking to the three people responsible for Atlas Obscura, Dylan Thuris, Joshua Fora, Ella Morton. With 600 entries, I'm a little reluctant to ask you about some of the entries because I'm not sure that all of you will remember every one of the 600.
You can try us. We're pretty good.
It's got to be easier to remember where the Maniac Machine is, for example.
I think there are actually a couple of them in the world.
One's in New Zealand.
What is a Maniac machine?
I believe it's a machine that uses water flow to demonstrate how the economy works.
Uh-huh.
So like before you could build a computer model of something as complex as a national economy, this economist basically developed a machine that uses
a hydrological model. I mean, the water is the money, and basically different levers, you know,
increase taxes, decrease
exactly.
spending, and you get to see what the effects would be on the economy using water.
It's actually ingenious. It's totally amazing. I wish there was one, you know, like here.
We
have these billboards with numbers that keep on changing.
Right.
Kind of boring. There's also the Witches Market in Bolivia. What do they sell there?
Dylan and I have actually been there
yeah.
and shopped there. And brought home a llama fetus.
They sell llama fetuses. That is one of the primary goods they sell, which are...
And why would you want a llama fetus?
They are good luck symbols. And so you, and when you're starting a new business or you're buying a home, they are buried, you know, on the, in the foundation before you build. And they bring, you know, fortune to the endeavor. And so we brought one back. We actually gave a small one to our publisher, Workman, as an example of this endeavor.
I hope nobody from Homeland Security is listening to that to smuggle it through customs.
How do you get a llama fetus? Are you aborting the llamas, or do they just?
It comes from the meat industry. Though there's a llama meat industry, so it's like a byproduct of that.
The website has 6,000 entries, only 600 in the book. So you had to pick and choose.
Yeah, it's 10,000.
10,000 entries.
Oh, it's up to 10,000 now?
Yeah. And more pouring in every day. It was very hard to choose the 700 that would be in this book.
Are most of these entries well-known locally but unknown to the rest of the world?
Well, it's pretty fascinating. We find that I found that when I give people the book to look at, they instantly look for their hometown to see, oh, I bet I know what's in here. And so many people have said to me, wow, that's right near me, and I didn't even know it was there. And that's what we found when we were putting the New York part together. I was putting the list together. I was like, I've never even heard of that, and that's right down the
Such
street.
Such as?
Things like the New York Earth Room, which is a room in Soho full of dirt, which doesn't sound like much, but you go there and it's incredible. It smells amazing. It's this art project.
And it's an art project, so...
Yes.
It's been there for like 36 years. It's longer than that, even. It's been there a really long time. And
it's sprayed every day to keep fresh?
I think it's every couple of weeks.
And I bet you've walked past it 36 times, and you never rung the doorbell to go up the steps and experience it.
Have any of you swum in Hamilton Pool in Austin or seen Mount Roraima? Is it Roraima in Venezuela?
No.
I would really like to go to Hamilton. It's beautiful. And that's actually well known in the Austin area. I mean, I think it's like a local kind of treasure.
What makes it a special pool?
I mean, it's this beautiful kind of paradise. You know, it's this kind of tropical, clear waterfall going down in a basin. I mean, I think it's just a surprise that it's like a short trip from Austin.
Now, I'm assuming that geographical locations inspire different kinds of entries. In cities, you're going to get something totally different than you are in a mountain range, for example. In Australia, you have a two-page spread of photos of big things. What are the big things? And were you aware of them when you were growing up?
I was. You mentioned road trips before, and it's sort of an integral part of the road trip experience. Because Australia is so spread out, you spend hours on these highways when you take your childhood road trip. And to make things interesting, they build these giant things. That could be a giant sheep, a giant pineapple, a giant banana.
A guitar.
A guitar in Tamworth, which is the country music capital of Australia. So we thought they were pretty visually interesting. That's why we had that spread in there.
And do people in Australia say, let's go and see the giant pineapple?
I wouldn't call it a destination in itself, but it's definitely the thing that you know to look out for on the way to something else.
Well, the soil here in New York is an art piece of art, but there's a lot of land art in the United States Southwest. Is that the result of Smithson or somebody starting that trend?
Yeah, maybe it was just the available space. I mean, Spiral Jetty is probably the most famous, although Spiral Jetty submerges and emerges at varying times, so it kind of depends whether you see it or not depends on when you're out there. It's in Utah, but I think that's just where the land art movement seemed to have made its home. And there's just another giant project called City that was recently finished that's been underway for 20 years.
Is there any worry that you might make some of these venues too popular? I worry about things like the Slocum Mechanical Puzzle Collection in Bloomington or the Spiderweb Museum in Vermont. They seem rather fragile.
You know, that was a concern we had when we launched Atlas Obscura 7 years ago. And over the last 7 years, we have seen so many of the places that we've cataloged on the website now in the book disappear. And they disappear not because they're overloved, but because they're underloved. And one of the things we hope to accomplish with Atlas Obscura is to celebrate these places and ensure that they will continue to survive and be places that people can visit.
Although I don't think I'm going to be going to Romania to go to the Mary Cemetery. It sounds like a fascinating place.
That's one of my favorites. It's one of the many entries in the book that challenge your view of death because it approaches it from this very wry, witty perspective. It's this cemetery full of wooden headstones that are blue, and the epitaphs are really funny. They take a very sort of character-filled approach to each person's life, and some of them even depict images of the person in their final moments, showing how they died. It could be someone getting hit by a car, but it's a quirky thing.
One gravestone reads, "Jan to Derue loved horses. One more thing he loved very much, to sit on a table in a bar next to someone else's wife." That's the
tombstone. Yeah, they were very honest.
Are there a lot of cemeteries like that, or is this a unique situation?
That's like one of a kind in the world.
And who writes those headstones, friends or foes?
There's one guy who did it for 20 years, and then he died. His headstone is also there and was carved by his apprentice, who now does them.
Now, Australia is not the only place with large things. In Texas, isn't there a large pair of legs?
Oh, yes. Ozymandias of the Plains. It's a modern spin on the Percy Shelley poem. And people love it. It's again on the roadside. It's a pair of legs. People love to, depending on your interpretation, deface or enhance this pair of legs. They paint socks on them, gym socks sometimes. They leave their own mark.
I'd be afraid that it was packing heat. I've been through Texas. There'll be a presentation and release party by Atlas Obscura tomorrow at 8 p.m. at a building in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Is that one of the places in this book?
It is not in the book, but it is on the site. I mean, and it's, if you've never been inside there and seen the room that the party's happening in, is one of the giant warehouses where they would literally lift ships. They would just pick them up to fix the bottoms of themselves.
There'll also be a discussion and reception on October 9th at the Covers Cafe in Chelsea as part of the New Yorker Festival. For more information about both events, you can visit wmyc.org/Lopate. And my great thanks to the people responsible for this fascinating book. I'm going to have to try to travel to a few of these places. It's called Atlas Obscura. They are Joshua Foer, Dylan Thuris, and Ella Morton. The book is published by Workman. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.